Hello and welcome to Why Family Based Solutions podcast. Today is the 11th of February 2019 and I'm Florence Grundling. In today's podcast, I'm going to talk about some of the long-term consequences of institutionalization in the context of family-based care. In the blogs that are going to be appearing in the next few days, I will talk about foster care and adoptive care, and in both those blogs, I will bring forward the need to provide training to families who are taking in a child who has been institutionalized for some time. And in today's story, I want to give an idea of why this is so important, why there is a need to train these families. The thing is that there are certain effects of institutionalization that are quite simply part of the child's brain development, and that will cause behavioral difficulties and sometimes mental health problems. And it helps if the family taking in a child is prepared for these kind of things, if they know that these things might happen, and if they are trained in skills in how to handle these situations to the benefit of the child and the family as a whole. The situation that I'm going to talk about today is just the story of one little girl, and this is not what is necessarily going to happen to any child who is adopted. Some children are adopted and have very few problems. Some children are adopted and have very different problems from the ones that I'm going to discuss today. But what I am discussing today is not terribly rare either. I want to give a little bit of background information of the problem we're talking about in today's story, just so you understand what is going on in the little girl's head. The problem that she turned out to have developed is called reactive attachment disorder. This is a disorder that is seen sometimes in children who are institutionalized, and particularly in children who have, to a certain extent, been able to depend on people and have been able to attach and bond with people to a certain extent, but always only for a limited time. So the brains of these children, based on the experience that they have concluded that there is no such thing as a long-term relationship. That just doesn't happen. In the short term, you can depend on people sometimes, but in the long term, they are going to abandon you to a certain extent. For the child, it's not always clear whether they have left or the other person has left and whether anyone wanted to leave. It's just their experience that no one was around in the long term. So the brain, having decided that this is the way the world works, it starts to develop to be able to cope with the situation as well as possible. And the survival strategy essentially is to make use of people, to a certain extent you could say, for as long as you can, but to be prepared that they are not going to stick around. Which means that once you've been with certain people or you've depended on certain people for a while, you start to look around for someone else. You go start to look around for a replacement, and you try to charm someone else into liking you and taking care of you before you get dumped by the previous person. And once you've lined up someone else, you start to dump the other person before they can dump you. So what you often see is that children become very, very difficult and can have extremely challenging behavior because psychologically it's easier to feel like you have rejected someone else than that you have been rejected by someone else. So the child essentially starts to work on something that could become a self-fulfilling prophecy. They become so difficult that it's almost impossible to deal with them anymore, to try and make sure that they are the one who has rejected the other and that they are not the ones who were rejected, so they can feel in control to a certain extent. With that information, I think it's time to go to our story now. And the little girl in the story, I'm going to call Anna for the moment. I met her several years ago, and when I met her, she was about a year old. I met her in an institution that I was involved with on and off that I visited regularly. And when I first met her, she had arrived at that institution about 2, 3 months before. As I said, she was about a year old. Before she arrived in this institution, she had been in another institution where care was much less well organized. And that institution had asked the institution that I was involved in if they could take over her care because this little girl had a congenital chronic medical condition that needed a lot of care and support, and the other institution was not able to provide that. We had some information about her past, and some of it also became clear by the way she acted when she arrived. When she arrived, Anna was very, very afraid of people and of physical contact. It became clear that she had probably spent most of her life in the other institution. We don't know exactly when she arrived there. But for most of her life, for most of the year, she had been in a place where there were very few caregivers and many children. So children, in any case, did not get a lot of attention or interaction from adults. But on top of that, the people in the other institution were very wary of her medical condition and were afraid that she was really too frail to have a lot of activities or physical contact. So her reality in the first year had been that she was left in a bed on her own, was not held, was not taken out of her bed, except for when the daily medical care was taken care of. And because that medical care was often painful, this was the only association she had with physical contact and human interaction. For her, human interaction and physical contact equated pain, and so she wanted to stay as far away from that as possible. When she had been moved to the institution that I was involved in, her care improved drastically. This was an institution where, relatively speaking, the care was of a very high standard. It was essentially as good as you could hope for care to be in an institutional situation, which means it was by no means ideal. But it was a lot better than you would see in most places. One of the big advantages was that in this institution, there were one caregiver per 2 or 3 children. So there was a lot of interaction with the children. The caregivers had been trained and they had been instructed to spend a lot of time with the children, to hold babies, to let toddlers sit on their lap, to tell stories, read books. Let the children play with toys, sing songs. So there was a lot of attention, a lot of stimulation, a lot of physical contact. The only thing that was not there was a real opportunity to form attachments because there were no dedicated caregivers for children. The caregivers worked shifts and were assigned different children on any shift they started. So while most caregivers did work there for several years, and most of the children got to know several of the caregivers relatively well, they could not depend on a certain caregiver always being there for them. But still, the care here was a lot better than in most places. So this little girl, Anna, came, and when she originally arrived, she would scream most of the time. She would scream or she would sleep, and that was pretty much it. She was very afraid of other people, and so they made an effort to give her the space to gain trust while still interacting with her. So they allowed her to spend much more time in her bed than they would usually allow children to spend. But from a distance, without trying to make physical contact, caregivers would still interact with her and would provide her with toys and would try to gain her trust. And every day, her medical care was taken care of. And where previously it had been very painful and very matter-of-factly done, here they made sure that she was given pain medication so that she would not experience the pain of what had to be done. And there would always be an extra adult there while medical care was given to provide Anna with distractions, using toys and singing songs and giving her something to do. It took quite a while for Anna to slowly start to emerge from her shell. But gradually, bit by bit, she became more responsive. She was crying less and she was sleeping less. She spent more time playing, for example, and she started to smile at people and to interact with them. As she grew older, she started to talk a little bit. And gradually, she even started to enjoy physical contact. She started to not spend all of her time in her bed. She just went to bed for her sleep and was out of it with the other children, when it wasn't time to sleep. And gradually, she would crawl onto people's laps, and sit with them and would actually look for a hug or some physical contact from other people. So she was doing really, really well and improving a lot. Her medical condition, although it couldn't be cured, was managed much better, so it wasn't getting in the way as much as it had previously. And because she was in much better shape now and she had a lot more interaction and stimulation, she was starting to catch up on her milestones, which she was very far behind on when she arrived. It wasn't all sunny and smiley. At times, Anna would throw very big temper tantrums. If she didn't want something, or if she was trying to manipulate people, or if she wanted a certain person for certain things, she could stage a really big scene. Some of the people here were able to deal with that, cope with that, and set some limits for her and give her some clarity. Unfortunately, most of the caregivers did not feel able to do that. They still felt very sorry for her and they didn't want to upset her, so they were inclined to give in whenever she had a temper tantrum, which meant that she was encouraged in having more of those. But as I said, generally speaking, she was doing really well. And while she wasn't forming real attachment with caregivers who kind of rotated, she did know most of them, and she did form a kind of attachment to the two people who were primarily responsible for her medical care, who were one or both of them would be there every day, to help take care of her medical needs. And she got quite close to them. Anna was in this institution for about 2.5 years when very good news arrived. Adoptive parents had been found. A family had been found abroad who was willing and able to take her into their family and to take care of her medical needs. So this was very exciting. Anna was about 3.5 years old, and she was going to go live with a real family. Over the years that Anna had been in that institution, I had visited various times, and I had also built a relationship with her and spent quite a lot of time with her, and I was very fond of her. So I was really, really happy for her when she got her family anyway, but particularly that I was able to stay in touch with that family to a certain extent and follow her journey after she left the institution. When the time came for her adoptive parents to come and get her, her adoptive parents came to spend a few days at the institution, both to get to know her and to allow her to get to know them before they took her away, but also to receive training in the medical care that she needed so that they would be able to take care of all of her needs. After that time was spent and they knew each other and they were confident in dealing with her special needs, the adoption procedure was finalized and Anna went with her family to start a completely new life on the other side of the world. Of course, everyone expected Anna to be very unsettled for some time to come because she was moving to a different country. She had to learn a different language. She had to find a way to learn to communicate with her parents while she was still learning the new language. And this little girl was a chatterbox in her own language. She loved to chat and to sing. And her entire environment would be completely different from everything she had been used to her entire life. But to all our surprises, she settled in really, really well. She seemed to adapt to the new situation very easily and very smoothly. Occasionally, of course, she was upset and she wasn't sure about things. But generally speaking, she was very easygoing and willing to try out new things and to go along with what happened. Both the adoptive family and anyone who already knew Anna were quite surprised by that and thrilled that this was going a lot easier than anyone could have hoped. Unfortunately, this did not last. The easy time lasted a few months, and then slowly the temper tantrums became more frequent. For a while, this seemed like natural progression. Maybe Anna had just tried to be extra good and extra nice in a situation that she didn't know because she wasn't too sure about it, and she was going back to her own self now. Which would be a good thing. And the adoptive families had good training and a good approach of being very firm and very loving with Anna at the same time. So giving her very clear limits of what is and is not acceptable behavior and what they would and would not tolerate, while at the same time giving a very strong message that even though her behavior was not always acceptable, they still loved her very, very much, regardless. That was a very, very good approach. Unfortunately, it was not enough. It was not effective. The tantrums got worse and worse. She became very uncooperative at times, as in impossible to get her to do things, whatever they wanted her to do. And Still, it got worse and worse over time. At a certain point, she stopped eating. She started to outright refuse to eat. And this was not your regular toddler. I would like to have something better to eat, so I'm going to refuse to eat this now until I'm properly hungry. No, this was a proper refusal to eat, where she would skip meal after meal after meal, and they couldn't convince her to take in anything until the point came where they were forced to have a feeding tube placed because she was losing so much weight, and that was really becoming a hazard to her health. It was probably around this time that the family started looking for help. But the problem is that later it was diagnosed that Anna had reactive attachment disorder. But at this point, there was no diagnosis yet. There was just very challenging behavior and a question of what could be done. So the family was looking for to find out what was going on and what they should do and what kind of help was available for them to cope with this. The problem is that with reactive attachment disorder, once the child starts to act out against the so-called old trusted people because she expects to be dumped at any time and wants to do the dumping first, at the same time, she is looking for someone new, which means that she is utterly charming and easygoing and cute with any new person she meets. So, all the new people she meets, which includes the social workers, the psychiatrists, the psychologists, and the doctors, just see this version of her, this lovely girl who is easygoing, who is very obedient and very, very charming. And the general consensus is that somehow the parents are struggling with something, but it must be their problem because clearly it's not the girl. The girl is doing absolutely marvelously. So while the parents were trying to find help, but walking into brick walls left, right, and center because they couldn't convince anyone of the behavior that they were seeing at home, that behavior at home continued to get worse. Anna was now not only refusing to eat, she was also starting to self-harm in more and more serious ways. There had to be a constant vigilance to try and prevent her from harming herself. And even with the constant vigilance, she would still find ways to do it from time to time. When this had been going on for some time, finally the parents met with a professional who recognized the situation, who believed their accounts despite seeing something else himself. And he was the one who diagnosed Anna with reactive attachment disorder and who was able to give the parents advice and to help them organize the assistance that they needed. To be able to deal with Anna and to be able to deal with the other children they already had in their family. The difficult behavior never really stopped because, in the end, when Anna had been with her adoptive family for about 2.5, 3 years, she passed away from the results of her medical condition. So that was the end of the story rather than a resolving of the situation with the reactive attachment disorder. But this is still a very good example of how important it is for parents to be aware of what they may encounter when they adopt a child who's been institutionalized for a long time. And for professionals to be aware of this as well so that they are able to provide parents with the help they need, because otherwise, chances are that parents actually, despite how much they love the child they have adopted or that they have decided to foster, they are not able to cope with this situation, which makes the child's behavior turn into a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because if they really cannot cope, the child cannot stay with them, and the child has been effectively abandoned again, despite the fact that no one wanted that to be the outcome. So training, support, and guidance are essential for any family who takes in a child that has been institutionalized for a longer time, in order for that placement to be able to be beneficial to the child and to work out, which is all anyone wants out of this. Thank you for listening, and please continue to educate yourself on how to help and not harm vulnerable children, so we can keep moving forward towards family-based solutions for all children.